He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Thank God it's
Thank God it is Friday, May the 22nd, 8 minutes after 10 o'clock. Welcome to the program. Some heads up. Later today, we'll be revisiting that crazy story we brought you yesterday where the elite private school in the Bronx separated third graders by race to teach them about racism. I thought it was a knucklehead idea, separating these kids. Remember, I have a third grader just graduating. Separating them by race, is that a good idea? We have some of the parents joining us. That'll be at 10:30 this morning, including the ace legal analyst, CNN's Sonny Hostin, who happens to be Puerto Rican, black, a parent at the school that is doing this self-segregation. Also, the great Paul Schaefer will be joining us at 11:30 to tell us what it was like to sidekick for the retired David Letterman for 33 years. But allow me to start on a grimmer note. I want to get into two crime stories, and then we'll get to those lighter and perhaps more generally relevant stories of self-segregation, and then being entertained by Paul Schaefer. Thursday morning, yesterday morning, Baltimore, Maryland, Baltimore suffered its 100th homicide this year. 100 homicides in Baltimore. Baltimore is a city of 600,000. It has about the same number of murders as New York, a city of 8.4 million. So it's about 15 times the New York murder rate. Baltimore suffering its 100th homicide of the year. 39 homicides in Baltimore in just the last month. The overwhelming majority of those killings have been black on black. Black men killing other black men. The streets of the west side of Baltimore have run red with blood. Red with blood. But there has not been a word about this epidemic of murder in Baltimore from any major civil rights group. There have been no protests that I know of, other than those revolving around the tragic death of Freddie Gray, the young man who died in police custody. So you have 100 homicides so far in 2015 in Baltimore, the worst body count in decades, and you have not heard from the President of the United States, the mayor of Baltimore, the congressional delegation of Baltimore County and Maryland, nor the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch of the United States. None have marked the grim milestone with a public statement. 100 homicides so far in 2015 in Baltimore. No public statements. The question is, do black lives only matter when they are taken by cops, especially white cops? 100 homicides in Baltimore so far in 2015. That, I submit, is the civil rights issue of this era. So that's one thing I just had to say. The other one, and no mention, the apparent solving of the Manchin murders case in D.C. Great work by the D.C. detectives who thought to check the discarded pizza for DNA. I mean, that was real wisdom, great police work, real CSI stuff. It also, I submit, if I can use that pretentious expression one more time, shows the wisdom of the Supreme Court's bitterly divided 5-4 decision 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, 2013, allowing the collection of DNA from all suspects arrested for serious crimes, even before they are convicted. Now, I know that there were four justices led by Anton Scalia who said, wait a second, you can't collect DNA unless someone's convicted of the crime. No, said the majority led by the Chief Justice Roberts. The allegation, the probability, the probable cause to believe that you committed a serious crime, that's reason enough for us to collect your DNA and store it. I know Senator Rand Paul is probably squawking about that, but look how it played out in this case. You had this perp, the alleged perp, Darren Wint, who had committed or been arrested for several violent crimes, acquitted of most of them, convicted of one or two. But his DNA was in the data bank, and it was the match of his DNA. I mean, imagine this arrogant, greedy, violent, sadistic ex-con, stupid enough or insensitive enough, my God, to order a pizza after he kidnaps the family. Stupid enough also to use his own cell phone, pinging all the way from the crime scene in Washington, D.C. to his girlfriend's house in Brooklyn, then back again to Washington, D.C., pinging his own phone the whole way. Now, I don't know. You know, he was arrested with a bunch of family members and friends in two vehicles. I don't know if those others played any role along with this alleged killer in the savage crime. But those arrested with Wint seem at least to be accessories after the fact. Therefore, they are also chargeable as suspected felons. But once this guy Wint gained entry to the victim's home, I think that he could easily have subdued the Savopoulos parents, that housekeeper by himself, and then terrorized those grown-ups by torturing the 10-year-old. Torturing the 10-year-old until the husband cooperated with the savage by arranging the delivery of $40,000 in cash from the victim's company. So here's what I want to say about this. Thank God these things only happen once in a while. You know, once in a great while. This atrocity, though, isn't it reminiscent of the kidnapping, the rape, the murders, the arson of the Pettit family, the family in Connecticut? No one but the surviving scum who committed that horrible crime in Connecticut or this one in D.C. know exactly how their obscene crimes went down. But the bottom line big lesson here, and again, these crimes are very, very rare, thank God. But the bottom line big lesson here is not to allow funky people who arrive uninvited into your home. Now, maybe Wint secretly broke in and surprised the occupants. But if not, if he knocked on the door, as I suspect he did, and just introduced himself as a former employee, then the dad should have met him outside the front door. Even if Wint was known to the Savopoulos family due to that past employment at the family business, still, you know, what was he doing there? Forgive me for generalizing, and I don't in any way place any blame on the victims in these cases. But you don't let people into your house. And based on my reporting on, even though they are extremely rare, too many of these hostage, torture, murder cases, if, God forbid, you find yourself in a similar jam, don't cooperate. Do everything you possibly can to get the word to the outside world that you or yours are in extremis. You fight back. You shout. You scream. You throw something through the window. Don't ever for a second think that you can reason with a monster. If you have an opportunity to speak with someone on the outside, like if you're arranging for the 40 grand to be delivered or something like that, or the mother in the Pettit family tragedy going to the bank and making the withdrawal, you've got to take risks. If you surrender to terror, whether in a criminal situation or war, it only emboldens the sadists who swell in their feeling of omnipotence as their increasingly helpless victims try urgently to satisfy their sick demands. I'm telling you, the bottom line, once the perp or the perps go down that road, home invasion, kidnapping, torture, he or they are going to kill you anyway. Fight back. All right, enough about these crime stories. 866 Geraldo. In the next segment, I'm going to set up this incredible school story. if you have a parent, if you are concerned about this racially charged atmosphere that we have in this country right now, with all of these protests and everything else that's going down, and here you have a school child who in his or her third grade is being separated by race because some scholar thought that this was the way, some sociologist, that this was the way to teach kids about race, then I want you to stay tuned because we're going to dissect this program. And even in my own kids' school, there's something similar going on. And I disapprove of it to the deep, deep, deep recesses of my soul. I don't think this is a good idea. I think the last thing we need right now is for people to be separated along racial lines, whether they are in third grade or 30 or 60 years old. It's a bad idea. It is 18 minutes after 10 o'clock. This is an important show on Friday before Memorial Day. Big beach weekend maybe coming up, but this is a big, big show, and we'll be right back.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
So let me set the stage. Welcome back, 77 WABC. I'm Geraldo, and I am beyond frustrated with this self-segregation going on at Fieldston, the elite private school up in the Bronx and in other schools in whole or in part. This whole movement of affinity groups to separate these children by race. Fieldston specifically separating third graders for 5 weeks. They did this program and separate them by race to teach them about racism. I think by doing that, by separating these children, what you are doing is aiding and abetting the very sin that they are preaching against. Look at the atmosphere in this country right now as we approach this long, hot summer. We have a hypercharged racial atmosphere, it seems to me. The worst it's been since the 1970s, which is bitterly ironic given the fact that we have the first black president in our history. So here you have, and I'm the parent of a mixed ethnic third grader. I get it. I'm a member of Tapestry, the group in my kids' school. And there's a similar movement, not quite as structured as it is at Fieldston. But I think that it's a terrible, terrible mistake. The best route, it seems to me, to success in school or life is to be part of the cultural mainstream. That's why I preach against hoodies and the pants worn below your ass and all that stuff. Because I think the children especially have to feel that they are equal members of a larger family, society itself. We are past this segregation. We want to put it behind us. It's the sin of the past. Children have to feel that they are equal members of the larger family, society itself. By emphasizing to a child, and these children, I'm telling you, are probably unaware or uninterested in race, other than as a vague physical description. I think it's a mistake. I think it's self-segregation. So what are they going to have next as one of these lessons for the children so they can understand what racism is? What are we going to have now? 5 weeks of the black children using a separate entrance and the Puerto Rican children using a separate water fountain and the Asian children, going to the gym and not being able to sit in one side of the bleachers or the other side of the bleachers or sit together in an integrated way in the lunchroom? This is a classic example of liberalism run amok. Everybody hates racism. Any thoughtful person hates racism. The last thing we want is for our children to be in any way filled with any racial animosity. My children have been raised with other children of other racial and ethnic groups since they were able to be with other children. That's how you fight racism. You fight racism by making race irrelevant. You know, it's interesting. You want it to be interesting. You know, maybe there's a cultural difference here. Maybe there's a tale to tell. Maybe there's a tradition, a virtue you want to extol here or there. But to separate kids by race, what happens in my family? So does my daughter go with the Puerto Rican kids or does she go with the Jewish kids? What if you have a black, white, mixed kid? Do they go to one affinity group for this meeting and then another affinity group for that? Or are they barred from the meeting because they are mixed race? I mean, once you go down that road, separating people by race this way, that's a totalitarian memory that we have. It is a bizarre idea that you could paint it with any kind of liberal brush you want. It's an awful idea, and we're going to discuss it with the parents after this.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Minutes after 10 o'clock. In my kids' school, my two big girls went to the school. Now, Sol is a third grader there. We've always had a group called the Tapestry Group, which is like an integration group. We have every ethnic group, and it emphasizes, obviously, the racial and ethnic minorities, black and Latinas. There, it's an all-girls school. Then in recent years, just in the last couple of years, they started another group, Parents of Children of Color, which is almost exclusively the black parents there. And why did they form that second group? The first group, Tapestry, still exists, but they formed the second group because the black moms especially, but the black parents felt that the kids needed more comfort to be able to talk about their specific problems, and maybe they felt shy about speaking about them in front of people of other races or ethnicities, maybe the hair or the nanny situation, whatever it was. I complained bitterly about it because to me, that other group, that second group, was self-segregating. It was almost as if they were like creating separate water fountains and entrances to make a point there. I did not like it. And our program in our school, as bad as I think it is, pales in comparison to the much more structured, intentionally self-segregating program that they have at another elite New York City private school, Fieldston, up in the Bronx. In Fieldston, they separate third graders by race to teach them about racism. I think they're aiding and abetting the sin they're preaching against. I'm an integrationist. I think this is a terrible idea, but we've been contacted. First of all, the phones ran off the hook when we spoke to the author of the New York Magazine cover story that explained this program. The phone ran off the hook, but one of the calls I got is one of the most honored legal analysts in television. She happens to be the mother of a child, actually two children at Fieldston School. She also happens to be part Puerto Rican and part black. So what group is her kid in? Is her kid with the black kids? Is the kid with the white kids? Is the kid with the other Latina kids? You can imagine her. Sonny Hostin, the CNN analyst mom, joins us right now. Sonny, give me your opening statements as the brilliant lawyer, journalist, and columnist that you are.
Good morning, Geraldo. You know, I think that Fieldston tries very hard to get it right. I think Fieldston certainly has been pioneering in terms of diversity at the school and race relations, I think Fieldston got it wrong when it comes to this program, in large part because the program was billed to the parents as a way to teach the children racial fluency and racial literacy. And I think we can all agree, given what's going on in our society today, all of the ills of racism that we see in the media and in our lives, that racial fluency is important. But this program, the linchpin of the program, is mandatory segregation by race. And I think that's where it goes off the rails. Bottom line is, I don't understand why children at ages 8 to 10, we're talking about very young children, can't be taught about race, about racial fluency, all together in one group.
Amen.
Our goal, right. If our goal is to make sure that our children are comfortable around people of all races, all ethnicities, then I think separating them by racial identity doesn't get us where we need to be. And you mentioned my children. I mean, my children are, black. They're Latino. They're also white. My child, my 8-year-old, was very confused by the program, and she's been in 3 separate groups. Somehow she was assigned to the African-American group. The next session, she then went to the multiracial group. Now she is in the Latino group because she gets to practice Spanish, which is her reasoning. And so, again, I think as adults, we are putting on these labels, these boxes to our children that we have been hemmed in by, but we are not allowing our children to grow up in a different type of world. That's the problem I have.
I have the same exact problem. Sunny Hostin is our guest. We're also joined by Dr. Anna Seppin, who is a Fieldston alum and the parent of a third grader. Dr. Seppin, am I pronouncing it right?
Seppin.
Okay. Dr. Seppin, a Fieldston alum, you joined Sunny Hostin and myself. Now, how do you feel about this program?
Thank you, Geraldo, for having us. So I also applaud the school's efforts to improve racial literacy. I also support voluntary affinity groups, but I am also opposed to doing it this way.
The program is now, what's your beef with the program?
So the program is sending the very dangerous message that my child should separate by race.
Yeah.
She's supposed to be most comfortable with those of her race. The school can't decide that for her. It is paternalistic and regressive to do so.
And so who had this great idea? How could they get it past all you high-functioning moms?
So, you know, I think that they understand that there's a problem, which we all agree there is, and this was just the proposed solution. I think that we could have gotten it a little bit better. I think we all want to be a part of the solution, but quite frankly, there wasn't much dialogue had around this topic before the program was implemented, and I think had there been a better dialogue, better buy-in from the parent body, it could have been done in a better way.
I just think that this is bizarre. Jennifer Brozost, the author of the New York City Private School Admissions Handbook, which is a bestseller where I come from on the Upper East Side. But Jennifer, you're the mother of a fifth grader. Let me ask you, in this racially, I don't know what your race or ethnicity is or your children's, but you've got a fifth
grader. They're white. I'm part of the white group.
All right, you're the white group. Now, this is a very racially charged atmosphere we have in this country. When your fifth grader got separated out, or did your fifth grader get separated? This is...
Oh, yeah, because, you know, listen, these are extremely young children, as everyone has said. I completely agree with everything that Anna and Sunny has said. You know, Geraldo, we are talking about 8-year-old children, 9-year-old children, 10-year-old children who are being told that they have to self-identify by race, and that's how they are expected to identify.
It's a terrible, terrible idea.
Well, it's terrible.
But let me ask you this, Jennifer. You're the author of this handbook, a private school admissions handbook.
Yeah.
How much of this is the desperate effort by these private schools to get minority students, knowing that the minority students have a inside track if they perform well to some elite school and making the prep school therefore look good?
Yeah, well, I have to say, the thing about Fieldston, and I am a huge Fieldston fan, I do believe they have it wrong here. The thing about Fieldston and why I chose to go there and why many parents choose this school, it is naturally diverse. it is Fields and Lower, where my daughter goes, is one of the most diverse, if not the most diverse, lower school out there. And they teach about race. They do it in every day with everyone together. We just went to a parents' day where we sat there and they were talking about the civil rights movement. They do it in such a wonderful way. By adding this element and having these kids separate themselves and have to self-identify, it has become extremely confusing for them. And kids are feeling confused by what they're supposed to feel. You know, the school has a lot of power over these young children because these kids aren't old enough to discern what is true and what is not true. So everything the school says to them, they
is
believe.
True. I
and
agree.
This is a major problem.
Noam is nodding too.
Can I tell you, can I say a quick
sure.
story? My daughter, who is in fifth grade, came home very upset after this all started. And I asked her what was wrong. And she said that in her ethics class, which is a small group, they did a blind vote, which means everyone closed their eyes. And she was asked, whose parents are against this program? The kids raised their hand. And she was told, that is because white people do not know how to talk or are uncomfortable talking about race.
That's so bad. I'm telling you, I've got to take a break. Let me take a break. I'll come back.
Go ahead.
And I'm going to come back. 866 Geraldo, I want you to join in here. We have three great guests, including Sunny Hostin, the great legal analyst from CNN, all parents. But let me tell you, my daughter's best friend is a black child. They were raised together. And now they're almost 10 years old. One's 9 and one's almost 10 years old. One's almost 9, the other's almost 10. Raised together from age 2. I never one time heard my daughter refer to her friend, Lola, as black. It's her best friend, and they play this and they play that, and they go here, they go to camp together. Never. I think that the secret to success in life, you know who you are. You want to be proud of who you are. But it's got to be about we're all in this together. Otherwise, we are doomed to have the worst kind of stresses, the worst kind of tensions. I mean, didn't we fight all those years to integrate? What the hell happened to integration? We'll be right back with these great moms. Your calls after this.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back. Let me take a caller. We have three great parents. We'll take a caller, and then we'll go back to our parents at Fieldston. Hi, Marilyn from Orange County.
I have a wonderful story to tell you.
Tell me.
I have a granddaughter who lives next door to a Chinese child that was adopted by a blonde, blue-eyed family. Now, just to let you know how long these 10-year-olds know each other, her grandmother and I wheeled them together in baby carriages. About a month ago, my granddaughter and her brother came running into the house and said, "Grandma, you'll never guess what? What? Lily next door was born in China."
That's great. Reminds me of the Steve Martin movie. He's raised by the black family.
Yeah.
Then they tell him he's got a
jerk. That's a jerk.
It's a funny movie. Marilyn, thanks. Thanks, Grandma. I appreciate that. I'll go back to Sonny Hostin. You know, Sonny, do you feel any pressure in telling this story? You know, usually, you know, these schools are so intent on keeping their business private.
You know, yeah, it did give me some pause to come out publicly, especially because I'm a public person, against this program, because I so love the school. My son has been, he's in seventh grade now, he's been at the school since he's 4 years old in pre-K. But I feel that because Fieldston is the type of school that promotes discourse, that wants our children to be able to debate, especially when they feel, you know, differently about something. I feel that it's the right thing to do, and I hope that the school understands that.
We're going to discuss it for another half hour, ladies and gentlemen. Don't touch that dial. 77 WABC.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
There is good and bad. Everyone, when we learn to live,
what we need to survive. Together.
But I like this sentiment. I know it's 1982, it's yesterday's news, Stevie Wonder, Paul McCartney. It seems to me that this is what we should be, the virtue we should be extolling right now, at this period of hyper-racial tension. Now, Noam Layden, you have been listening to this discussion we've been having about this private school program that separates third graders by race to teach them about racism, purportedly. I think it's a terrible idea. The administrators are defending it. We have the parents have been calling, including Sonny Hostin, the ace CNN legal analyst who happens to be a parent at Fieldston. But what do you think about this program?
You know, almost as outrageous as separating the classes, which I think is insane, was that they had one teacher, if I understood this right, at the Fieldston school, who asked kids to close their eyes and raise their hands if their parents were against the program. How frightening must that have been for like a 10-year-old to have to do that, to go against their parents or to think that they'd have to go against their parents? If I was a parent at that school, I would have been at that door the next day saying, what the hell's going on here?
Me too. And that's what I try. Erica called in, my wife. We are very concerned about this. I think self-segregation or even this whole notion is a terrible idea. I want to get back to the parents. I don't want to hog the microphone here. Let me get one caller. And then we'll get one from Staten Island. We'll see what David has to say, and then we'll get back to our parents. Go ahead, David. What's on your mind, buddy?
Hi, Geraldo. You hear me all right?
I got you 5x5. What's up?
Okay, so a lot of people look and they say, oh, you know, this neighborhood is no good. It's 98% white. You know, maybe they don't like black people or something like that. And they act like everyone's a Klan member or something like that. But that's not the case. People want to live in neighborhoods that suit their lifestyle. So maybe a black couple wants to move and they see, oh, this neighborhood doesn't have our Baptist church, or they don't have a salon that can deal with hair because, you know, black people have different types of hair. And it's about lifestyle. And maybe they want to live in a place that has food that they're more familiar with, maybe like Jamaican food or something like that. And this neighborhood only has Italian food. So, and it's like that for a lot of different neighborhoods. And it's not a bad thing because, you know, we have a lot of different types of neighborhoods in New York. So if you want to go to have really good dim sum or Chinese, you know which neighborhood to go to. If you want to go salsa dancing, you know which neighborhood to go to. And that's a wonderful thing. And it's not necessarily a bad thing.
I get that, David. I appreciate that call. But my point is this. You want children to be colorblind, basically. I mean, I do. Then you raise them together in a way where race becomes irrelevant. Now, the bigger issue in my school, and Sonny, I'm sure that this is an issue. Sonny Hostin joins us right now. The bigger issue to me is when rich people go, what are you doing on the Memorial Day weekend? Oh, I'm going to Cannes in France, or I'm going to Machu Picchu, or I'm going to Hawaii, and the poor ethnic child or racially minority child can't afford to go to the Bronx Zoo. I mean, that to me is a bigger issue that parents have to deal with in private schools and in life. I don't want race to, but anyway, Sonny, what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's always the socioeconomic piece, and certainly that you see that in a lot of these private schools. You know, the private schools, at least in New York, you know, are what, $40,000 a year for tuition. And so many parents, while they can perhaps afford that or perhaps they're on scholarship, they can't afford to do a lot of the extracurriculars. But I will say that separate and apart from the socioeconomic issue, you know, the race issue, which is what I think Fieldston is trying to address. And Fieldston actually addresses the socioeconomic issues extremely well as well. Parents aren't allowed to give the gifts to teachers at the end of the year. There's a group gift. I mean, there are all these wonderful things that Fieldston does to, I think, assuage
level the
playing field issues. Absolutely. This issue in terms of race, I think what's also so problematic is that there really is no research, quite frankly, to support the methodology used at this school right now. You know,
Yeah, who says it works to make them more broad-minded as opposed to more racially oriented?
Exactly. Quite frankly, it appears to be kind of experimental. I mean, There is
yeah,
no
let them experiment
other,
someplace else, not on my children.
There's no other
school
in the country doing it this way. No other school that requires mandatory affinity groups. I think we can all say perhaps voluntary affinity groups make sense.
But that's what Dave of Staten Island was talking about. That's like the neighborhoods that self-segregate for reasons that are, you know, you want your dim sum if you're Chinese and you stay in Chinatown. I don't know. But,
I don't think you have to self-segregate to get
to get you a good dim sum. Puerto Ricans want to live in Connecticut. We want to live in Greenwich. Nicole is on the phone, another parent that feels it. Sorry to interrupt. Hi, Nicole. So tell me, where do you stand on this program?
I'm fascinated because these are friends of mine with children in the school, and I'm listening very interested in everything they say. And I have two children in the school, one in fifth and one in third. And they're actually both in different groups because third, fourth, and fifth groups, they meet all together. So I have one child in the third grade in the the general discussion group, and I have my fifth grader in the white group because she doesn't want to be with her sister. So we got a whole issue with that too.
Well, I understand that issue as a father of five. But
I guess I should just say, listen, I've been involved with this school for a long time. I was a student. I was briefly a teacher. I am a parent. I grew up in the Bronx. I went to Fielston Lower when it was a neighborhood school. My closest friends came from the South Bronx, and all the neighborhood around us. We were all middle class, all of us. Now, I happen to be white and Jewish. At the time, it was mostly Irish Catholic in Riverdale. But I will say, you know, Fielston is amazing. I love this school. I made my husband.
So how'd they make a mistake like this?
Well, I don't know. I actually think that the intentions are all good. I think the problem really is that...
You know what they say about the road to hell?
When you don't pull people into the discussion while you're trying to figure it out, you exclude people and you create a situation where the children are, unfortunately, if they listen to their voices in this mix, they really might learn something, because I think this is a lot of parental imposition and adult
parental
agendas.
Imposition. Me too. Let me talk to Frank here. Let me take
a
call.
Fielston. Trust me, I
understand. Every parent loves the great schools, but that's not the issue here. We're talking about a school that made a terrible mistake and they better correct it. Here's Frank in Blue Point.
We all want it to be better.
Of course,
no question on that. But I will say that, you know, between what Sonny and Anna and Jen said, they're right on target, and they're all qualified people to talk about this. I happen to be white and Jewish, but to be honest with you, I feel like I'm raised in the Bronx, and parents who worked hard to send me to school wasn't easy, and there is a socioeconomic part to this. And
let's not get off on that right now. Let me take Frank's call from Blue Point. What's on your mind, Frank?
Yeah, Geraldo, a simple scenario here. My child is in the third grade, right? He's sitting next to his friend who is black, okay? And now it's announced that this child who's black will be in a different classroom than him for the next 5 weeks. And my child says, why? He's my friend. And the answer, I guess, has to be because we have to teach you racial divide.
I think it's a terrible thing.
I mean,
I think that's a very vivid description, Frank.
And that's what's going to happen here. We're going to teach, and the kid's going to say, why is this? Why? He's my friend. I don't understand.
I agree. You know, Sonny, you've covered so much from Ferguson on. That's a year. Can you imagine what a year this has been? And I think that in some ways, because of this issue, black on blue, etc., the racial tension is, and having a black president, which we thought would alleviate, and that's why I and many voted for him, I don't think it's worked out that way. In this climate, do you think it's that we should be incredibly sensitive not to go where this program goes?
I do. I mean, it's fascinating. You're right. I've been covering these issues for the past couple of years. I was on the ground in Sanford, Florida. I was on the ground in Ferguson. I was on the ground in Baltimore. And so I'm especially someone that's been very vocal about social justice and issues of race. I am very surprised that this is the answer that Fielston came up with in terms of mandatory separation by race. I do think that the goal of racial fluency, we do want our kids to be able to talk sensitively about race, about these difficult issues that we are seeing all over our country. But the question is, how do we get there? Do we get there by separating kids by race and then bringing them all together? Or do we discuss issues concerning race in a safe place where everyone is made to feel welcome? I think that's the way to do it, because we have to talk about it. I'm not one that thinks the world needs to be colorblind, because the world isn't colorblind, right? We know that. But we do need to teach this generation of children how to address the racial divide and become racially literate without causing separation. I think we're putting years and years of our issues on the new
generation. Oh, me too. Me too. I totally agree with you. How did you find out about it, by the way? How were you informed?
You know, we were sent a couple of emails that said this is the new program, and this is what it looks like. The rollout was very terrible in the sense that we were given piecemeal information. I asked questions about whether or not these affinity programs were mandatory. I was first told that they were not mandatory. Then I found out later that they were mandatory. So the way it was rolled out without any parent buy-in is a problem. I will also say that I recently learned that in terms of evaluation for the program for next year, the program clearly is not going anywhere, the school is going to self-evaluate rather than get input from people like me and other parents. And that it remains a problem. I don't understand how you self-evaluate. For me, it's
really I love that. I give myself an A.
Exactly.
I'm brilliant. I'm brilliant. I'm constantly brilliant. I get an A+ every time. I self-evaluate. Sunny Huston, I'm going to let you go. You've been a trooper, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being so smart, so incisive in your thinking, not just as a legal analyst. That's the easy one. But as a mom, good job. Sunny Huston, I appreciate it. And the other moms too. I'm going to take your calls, folks. I'm going to do one more segment on this. I'll take your calls. So be patient. 866 Geraldo. I'll be right back.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866 Geraldo. 77 WABC.
25 minutes after 11 o'clock on this Friday. Thank God it is Friday. And thank you, God, a second time for making it a long weekend. We're off on Monday, Memorial Day. This morning on Fox and Friends, I was delighted to welcome to the plaza, you know, every Friday morning for the summer, Fox and Friends, my team, very Hamish family, La Familia there at Fox and Friends, wonderful people, Steve, Brian, and Elizabeth. We welcome the Navy was there in force. You know, it is Fleet Week. If you have a chance, get down to the Intrepid. The big vessels are either moored there or they are in the river. The streets are filled with sailors and Marines in Fleet Week. It's a great weekend. Enjoy this and remember Memorial Day. We commemorate the service of these great active duty and veterans who have served their nation so bravely, and how relevant it is now when we look like we're about to step off. I'll get to your calls momentarily on the issue of this self-segregation going on in this private school, but just how relevant Fleet Week is and how these service people are, with this ISIS crisis going on, with ISIS taking another Iraqi city, taking another Syrian city. So despite the full force, it isn't the full force, that's the problem, but despite the announced determination by the President of the United States and others to degrade and destroy the terrorist group ISIS, what you've seen instead is the ISIS continues to have advances. They're continuing to do well, and I think that we must muster immediately to hit back with far more force than we have been using. And yes, it will cost us in terms of treasure and, more importantly, in terms of the blood of our service people. But, the military has to defend us, and I think that they'll do the right thing if the president does the right thing. But now let me get a couple of minutes before we get to Paul Schaefer, our special guest at the bottom of the hour, a couple of minutes on this program in the private school where they are segregating third graders so the third graders can learn about race. I think it is a terrible idea. What do you think? He is Mutt, is it? Mutt,
yes.
Mutt? Hi.
Yes, no, not Mutt. Moot.
Moot. Okay, Moot.
Brother,
like Moot Court.
Peace and blessings to you and your listening audience.
Thank you, Moot.
Shalom and Hotep. I'm an African-Caribbean priest, African traditional priest, a mother and a grandmother, and my mom, God rest her soul, never brought me up like that. Okay, and what the answer, the solution, like you give solutions, which I love, is that we need prayer back into school. So we have to thank God and the goddess, which is the universe, for all people, and that humans...
I have no problem with prayer in school, but how does it help this program, the self-segregating program at the private school?
Well, they have to be shown that everyone, everything, every person, place, and thing is inclusive in the universe, in society, in politics, economic, social, psychological structures, religious structures, that everyone is important. Everybody is divine. And whatever subject that you have in the schools is associated with a cosmic energy. And so you just need somebody in there that has...
Mood, I feel like you've helped heal me already, and I appreciate you coming on. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much. You know, I'm thinking about, as the priestess said there, I like to give solutions. There's no doubt, and I've said this many times, that at a certain point, the parents of a child, a black or Latino child particularly, but all parents of teenagers, especially in the teenage year, have to have a conversation with them. And yes, there is no doubt, however much we want the nation to be colorblind and you want like law enforcement to respond equally to all children, regardless of race, color, blah, 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 you have to have a conversation at some point to be practical, particularly here, as I had with my children. Remember, Cruz's mom is Mexican. Cruz is a very brown-skinned young man. Gabriel is less so, but still I had a conversation with them about hoodies, about talking back to cops, about, where they hang out, what they do. You have to have that conversation. But you can't have that conversation in third grade. You must protect the innocence of these children as long as the child is colorblind. That's the sentiment. I want, one of the things I have always wanted, I'm almost crying saying this, is for my daughter to have nothing, no negative vibe in her life for as long as her father can put that bubble around her. I want it to be sophisticated and knowledgeable, but I want it to be happy and innocent.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Giant hit for Paul Schaefer, the man who is by the side of David Letterman for longer than any host in late night history, 33 years. Paul Schaefer, the band leader, the sidekick, the indispensable partner of David Letterman, joins us live right now. Paul, congratulations on a great run, man.
Thank you very much. I did it longer as the sidekick and band leader than anybody else ever did it.
And you did a fabulous job. I mean, you just knew when to speak up, when to play, when to do a riff. I mean, I guess it came with experience, but what was it that brought you two together initially?
I just got a call from his office, come in and have a meeting with him about doing his show. Which I did. He mentioned that he'd seen me on Saturday Night Live. I had been in the band on that show for the first 5 years and written special material, appeared on screen quite a bit towards the end of the five-year run. He had seen some of my stuff, most notably the stuff I would do with Bill Murray when Billy was the lounge singer.
Oh, that was a great act. That was a great act. The Bill Murray was, that was, the lounge singer was so perfect on Saturday Night Live. But, you know, David Letterman, most people think that he is, I've met him a couple of times. You never can see behind the facade. How long did it take you to break through to get to know the real guy? Did you get to know the real guy?
Yes, I think I did. He's a sweetheart of a man and a very loyal You know, and this comes through. You see how many staff members stayed with him for the same thing. I mean, I was with him all 33 years. Many of them predated me.
Wow.
And were on his morning show. You know, we always joke, I didn't do the morning show. I couldn't get up that early. But seriously, folks. And
Ba-dum-bum, yeah.
Yeah, but still, you know, it shows the loyalty that he has for people. And, you know, we went over. I know you went overseas, Geraldo, many times. And we're in the war zone. And we did it a number of times, too, on Christmas Eve. Not, you know, a little bit under the radar. So.
Really, it was. I mean, I didn't think of that, but now I remember now that you mentioned it. Congratulations on that.
We did it through the USO, you know, but we went over Christmas Eve, first year to Afghanistan. First year war was declared, and then after that to Iraq twice.
Well, congratulations, and particularly on Memorial Day.
I mean, so gratifying for us, but, you know, scary, of course, as hell. But I don't know. I think that I really got to see what kind of a guy this guy was at that time. And from then on, our friendship really was quite cemented.
I just before I continue with, you know, talking about Dave and the show and your experience on the show, you have a college grad? Did someone just graduate? I just had that.
Yes, and you too.
Me too, yeah.
Congratulations to you. It's my daughter, Victoria.
Oh, my daughter, Isabella. So where did you graduate from?
Congratulations to you. Victoria graduated from the New School.
Oh, congratulations to her.
And she won an award. It was wonderful in theater, you know.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, monstrous. So thank you very much.
So what are you going to do? What are you going to do, Paul?
Well,
Paul Schaefer,
to...
my guest, the great band leader, sidekick, amazing, amazing talent in his own right. What are you going to do now?
It sounds like a sketch where you could do. Remember when they used to do, you know, I can't remember. So, jugglers were so big on the Ed Sullivan Show. But one guy used to do a sketch. Well, when my brother didn't make it, you know, as you know, and he just threw up all the bowling pins and he just came crashing down. It's almost like me trying to be a sidekick. Yeah, that's nutty, you know, but nobody said anything. That's all I can do, you know.
Be a sidekick. Well, you come over here, you could join Gnome and I get up to.
You need a sidekick?
Well, a band. We need a band.
We need a band. We definitely need a band.
You got a sidekick. Yeah. Well, that was, you know, I used to be the band leader and the sidekick all in one. It was a hell of a job. It was fantastic. It sort of feels the very day after or 2 days after now, like it was all a dream.
I understand.
Did
that.
I really lead the CBS orchestra? You know, I mean, it was, if I do without any false humility, because there is none, I'm not that humble, but boy, it was fantastic.
Do you have a favorite musical guest with all the greats that you played?
You know, I've been asked, of course, before, and I always say the same thing, Mr. James Brown, the hardest working man in showbiz.
Wow, yeah. I met James a couple of times. What fun he was. How manic.
Please himself. It was like a music lesson every time he appeared, and he appeared many times. The very first time in about 82 was a killer. We were just 10 feet off the ground. And I told that story the other day on Letterman. I got to be a panel guest about how he summoned me after we played together because it had been so great. Come to the dressing room. My heart was pounding. I come in. He's under the hair dryer, you know, after the show. He's getting his hair done again. He always travels with a hairdresser. And he's trying to talk to me. Yeah, you know, but I can't keep giving you I can't. What he's saying,
say what?
I'm down on my knee, you know, eventually, actually down, supplicating myself before the Godfather of Soul, just trying to hear him under that hair dryer. The hair dryer becomes a throne, and it struck me that's exactly the way it should be.
Paul Schaefer, my guest. How about Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr?
Oh, boy. That show is coming up, I think. The broadcast of it on HBO, and we're talking about the most recent Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony this year from Cleveland in a big stadium that we've done it there every 4 years or so, and Ringo being inducted
as an individual. Yeah, about
time. Paul McCartney making the induction speech, inducting him, and then everybody playing together. Phenomenal. It really was great.
I'm such a fan. I really am. I think that's going to be great. My wife's hometown, Cleveland, anyway. So, what, you're going to be on the Law and Order? Did I hear that? Is that right?
I think, you know, in like a 3-episode arc, I'd like to play a villain. who...
they haven't cast you yet?
Not yet, no. You know, the phone's not ringing off the wall yet for any of those.
But this is Spinal Tap. You were great in that one.
That was an awful lot of fun. That was the first one where there was no lines written, really. Now Larry David, you know, does the hell out of it, but this was the first time where it was just scene outlines, and you'd go into these scenes, and you knew what you had to accomplish,
right.
But you would just be expected to talk, make up your own lines. Tremendously fun. Everybody breaking up during the thing because you hadn't heard these lines before. People making up their lines in advance, just not telling anybody. And then saying them when the cameras are rolling. And it was an awful lot of fun.
Funny stuff. It was like Seinfeld with music. But what did you do when Dave got in the jam with the whole sex thing? With the, you know.
How did you handle that
and how did he handle that with you all?
I don't know if that's, I mean, what a way to characterize it. Nonetheless, very forthright. He gathered everyone together before the show and said, this is what I am going to announce on the show and I'm going to talk about on the show. And so that was, you know, and then he went and did it and he, you know, copped to it and said, I have made a mistake. And I think people just respected him for doing that, you know? He did the best that he could.
He did, and he moved on. I don't want to end on that note. What about the success of the finale? The whole final week, but particularly Wednesday night's big show?
The top 10 list was an awful lot of fun, with each item being read by a celebrity guest that we have had through the years on the show. Everybody from Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Everybody on. It was great.
Jim
you had the
Carey.
President of the United States, for goodness sake. Oh, yeah, them all, Baldwin, every president.
And Bill Murray reading number one.
How did he get that shot? How did he get the last one?
He was all I know is that he was also the last panel guest the night before. He was the very last guest. He was certainly one of Dave's favorites.
I was going to say, it must be.
It's hard to choose between him and Tom Hanks.
Right. What Martin about Dylan Short. On Tuesday? Yeah, Dylan on Tuesday.
Dylan came and sang the most beautiful song. The night we called it a day, which apparently is from Sinatra's.
A Sinatra song, yeah.
I would, you know, have to confess, and I'm supposed to know so many songs, I wasn't familiar with it. But it was done absolutely beautifully with the steel guitar, and it was a poignant moment. Eddie Vedder, the night before, had just performed the, you know, Better Man, his song.
So are you bummed out now, or are you wistful? What's your sentiment, Paul Schaefer?
Certainly wistful. And, you know, that feeling of, was it all a dream? I did it really happen? I can't believe it. I was just, you know, I'm just waiting for the cable guy now. So, you know, there's a big difference, but nothing but, you know, when one thinks about it.
How you feeling? Didn't you have some health problems?
Feeling absolutely nothing but gratitude. That's all I can say.
Well, you congratulations.
No, I didn't have any problem. Oh, I had a little headache problem for a minute.
Little headache in the heart.
I no heart problem. Not me.
Okay, good. Oh, it was Dave had the heart problem.
Yeah, I get migraine headaches.
You got migraines. Oh, I'll give you an answer. We all got something. I got a rule with everybody my age. You can kvetch for the first 2 minutes. After that, you're not allowed to talk about it.
You remember the story about the two old jazz musicians sitting on a park bench? First guy says, Jewish jazz musicians. First guy says, oi. Second guy says, I'm hip.
On that note, the great Paul Schaefer, I'm sure
we've
seen plenty of you. A lot of fun having you on right now, and I wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
You had a great run. Congratulations on a great finale,
And I appreciate you coming on a lot, man. Thank
fun
you.
Fun being with you.
All right. Paul Schaefer, everybody. We'll be right back.
The headlines. The city's most pressing issues. Geraldo. Today and every day. 77 WABC.
The moon went down. Stars were gone. But the sun didn't rise with the dawn. There wasn't a thing left
to
say.
Have a safe ride to Washington, D.C., partner.
Thank you very much. What are you doing?
I'm not sure. I'm maybe going to go see Grandma in Florida or just hang out in Edgewater. You know, I'm missing Edgewater already.
That's not a good thing.
Have a great Memorial Day weekend, everybody. Drive safely. Gas is almost a dollar cheaper than it was a year ago, so the traffic is going to be monumental. But you know we love you. Stay safe. We're off on Monday, but we'll see you right here on Tuesday. So big shout out to you and yours. Have a great Shabbat, a great weekend and all that. See you here on Monday. I mean Tuesday.